It stood impassive and still under the burning heat of the rad-blasted sun, the sky a haze that shimmered above its topmost reaches, formed of two groupings of rock that stood upright in the middle of the desert, with no other outcrops within sight. It was an awesome spectacle. The reddish-brown rocks were jagged and uneven, rising and falling in a series of peaks and troughs that seemed to mirror one another, with a channel in the middle that was surprisingly clear of rockfalls. The fact that it stood alone meant that the elements had been equally harsh to each side of the outcrop, hence the similarity between the breaks and erosions along the top of the standing stones. At each end of the outcrop there was a narrow channel, wide enough for two wags to fit side by side. This widened to about three times that width as the center of the small valley was reached. It was enough space for the trade to take place, with both sides having room to move, but not enough to try any kind of maneuver. The rock on each side seemed too sheer for anyone to hide out, or to be strategically placed by either of the vills, seeking to gain advantage over the other. And the outcrop, standing solitary and magnificent as it did, fell almost exactly equidistant from Summerfield and Charity, meaning that neither side had to lose face by traveling a longer distance than the other to make the trade. A small thing, but it mattered to the barons. The interior of this valley was smooth on this fine morning, the earth now dry and baked as the sun drew the moisture from it that had fallen during the chemstorm. There was little sign of the churning mud pools and ridges that had been whipped up in the desert around the outcrop. The shape and position of the rocks had acted as a shield against the stronger winds, losing another layer of shale and rock on the outside as the chem-laden rain had lashed against it, but reducing the turmoil within to a minimum. Dean had been right in his assumption that the enclosed valley would throw up clouds of dust. The baking earth was nowhere near cracking, but already the layer of topsoil was so powdery and dry that any disturbance was likely to shake it loose and raise clouds of dust. But it was a fairly smooth and unpitted surface, good for driving. As the only area for miles around with some kind of shade or moisture retained in the shadowy areas of the rocks, it harbored not only the small amounts of hardy plant life that could be seen in the surrounding area, but also acted as home to a small colony of insects, reptiles, and mammals that were descended from meerkats and gophers, mutated into a scrawny yet defiant species that could scavenge and survive on very little. But today, as if some instinct for danger had told them as much, the scant wildlife that lived off the outcrop had taken cover, retreating into their burrows and seeking security within the recesses of the rocks. It was always quiet in and around the area, but as the sun hit the middle of the sky and the middle of the day, it became quieter still. The silence was broken by a distant buzz, which grew in volume, deepened in tone, until it became a rumble. If any of the creatures that were now safely in hiding had cared to look, it would have seen a moving cloud of dust coming toward the rocks, with the outlines of a group of wags just about visible within the flying layers of dust and soil. The hellbenders were nearing their goal. In the leading wag, Ryan and Christy could see the distant speck on the horizon begin to grow and take shape as they got closer. Within a few minutes, they could see that the tall, thin outcrop formed a valley, with a narrow channel both in and out of the enclosed space.
That's it, Corell?
That's it.
Corell was driving the wag one-handed, his sinewy wrist strong enough to control the wag steering over the rough ground, his knuckles white around the wheel. His other hand was caressing the box that was still cradled on his lap.
You want to tell us what that's all about?
Christy had noticed that Corell had been staring down at the box more and more as they approached the rendezvous point, muttering under his breath in an intense manner, even though it was too quiet for her to work out exactly what he was saying. All she knew was that every time she looked at him, her hair curled around her neck. Her time with Doc had shown her what madness could do. The hellbenders followed Corell loyally and to the letter. If he was to stay on the track of sanity, then it was best to probe this matter now.
You know the basic story.
Yeah, maybe. But there's more to it than what you've told us so far, right?
Maybe. Thing is, friends, I told you something of what happened, but not all of it. Because there are some things that are hard to speak of, even when you want to explain. Some things that seem to stick in your throat. And no matter how hard you try to force them out, they just won't come. And they gather within you, festering like a poison in an infected wound, until there comes a time when you just cannot keep it in any longer. You have to force it out. Break the skin and bleed the wound, so that the pure blood can start to run free once more. And that's what I'm trying to do now. That's what this is. For all of us, except you and your friends. Each in our different levels. We all have those wounds. I figured that mine are worse than anyone else's, but then that's because they're mine. Any one of us on this convoy could say the same thing. But if you knew why, if you understood the depths of degradation and despair, the very bottom of the pit that I feel I've been staring up from for so long, now this is my chance to clean the slate. To climb up the sides of that pit and get out where the air's fresh and sweet again. And if I'd buy the farm in the attempt, well, what have I done but buy a way out of this misery? Oblivion cannot be any more painful than what has been before.
Carell stopped, almost as though exhausted by the outburst, and Ryan cast his eye to Christy. Her hair clung to her neck and shoulders in long tendrils. This man was raving, on the verge of losing all control. If he did, then where would they stand when the firefight began? Ryan had rarely felt less in control of a situation than he did at this minute. His people were spread out over three wags in a convoy bound for a full-scale firefight with two other convoys, and at the helm was a madman. There had to be some way of pulling this together. If only he could communicate with J.B. Mildred and Doc, with Jack and Dean, and Danny, whose warnings were proving only too prophetic.
See, I was head of second charity, like I told you, and I was real diligent. I did my job properly, not from any great sense of loyalty, but just because that's the way I made. I couldn't do it any other way. Just wouldn't feel right. And I was real careful. My people were good, because I made damn sure they were. I wouldn't have any screwing around that could affect badly on me or put anyone in danger of Jurgensen's wrath, because he was a mean bastard. Man, I just wanted to keep him happy and do the job. He was an evil asshole and still is. But I didn't know just how fucking evil until he thought I'd done him wrong. See, there was a breach of sec when we were overseeing a trading convoy that passed through. The trader tried to rip off Jurgensen by selling him some shit rat poison instead of jolt. It's only because Jurgensen's personal drug taster took some and died puking out his own intestines that we knew it was shit. Hell, looking back, I wish it had been Jurgensen himself who tried it, greedy asshole that he is. No, he couldn't even oblige us on that. I had the traitor chased, but he slipped past the sec patrol pursuing him. Jurgensen was in a shit bad mood because he'd lost Jack and Face and couldn't even get high to make up for it. So he had the patrol chilled and called me before him. I'd never fucked up before. I'd have long since been chilled if that was the case. But even this time I knew I hadn't fucked up. Jurgensen left it nearly a day before trying the merchandise. If the shit had any sense at all, he would have had his taster tried before handing over the jack. So it was too late for my men to pick up the trail and catch the prick who did it. Not their fault, not mine. But after they'd been chilled, I was told what a useless piece of shit I was, and I was probably behind the plot to kill him. That crazy paranoid bastard had turned the whole thing into a conspiracy against him. And I was the one whose ass he wanted. Only he wasn't just going to chill me, oh no. He was going to make me suffer first. I was beaten senseless, but, well, no surprise there. It was my old men who did it, but I can't blame them. They were acting under orders, and you don't go against Baron Al. They beat me until I was in so much pain I couldn't even think. Everything seemed to come to me from a long way off, as though I was in some kind of bad dream. But I wasn't allowed to lose consciousness, not at any point. Oh, they knew exactly the nerve points to jolt me back if I started to fall. I knew I was bound to be chilled, but I didn't give a fuck by then. Let it happen. Release me from the pain. But it went too far. Just that touch of fuckwit sadism that sealed his own fate. See, he wasn't content with it just being me. He had to bring Becky into it.
Who was Becky?
She was my woman. Maybe the only thing person I ever really cared about. I never liked people that much. That's why I was so good at my job. I could do it without getting involved, without caring. But Becky was different. She was the only thing I would have died for. But that bastard Jurgensen didn't give me the chance. I was lying there, Sekhmet over me, too fucked up with pain to move. He had her brought in. They stripped her, and then he fucked her in front of me. Had the others do it, too. That was bad enough for her. She was crying like I'd never heard, looking at me like she didn't know whether to feel bad for herself or for me, despite how much she was hurting. That chilled part of me more than any physical pain could. And then he got out the branding irons. He used them on the horses we had to mark them as his own. Just a J-mark beaten out of metal. He fired them up, and he did it himself. They spread her legs, and he branded her between the legs, burning the flesh and hair so that... Oh, God, I can still smell it. And then it got to the point where she was near death, and he still wanted more. I swear the sick fuck had forgotten I was there by then. He just wanted to please himself. They took her out into the yard at the back of his palace, and there was a stake hammered into the ground. Kindling had been piled around it, and they tied her to the stake, bundling the kindling around her feet and legs. Two of them held me up while I was made to watch. Becky was in no kind of state to fight against him. Anyway, she's just one woman, and there were so many of them. They tied her against the stake. Then Jurgensen went up to her and fired up the kindling. That's when she started to scream. She'd made noises before, but all the fight had been knocked out of her. This is different. She was wide awake now. I knew what was going to happen. Fuck. I can't think of a worse way to go. Flames lift up her legs, and I swear I could see the flesh blistering as the heat got under her skin. The smell was horrible. Sweet and strong, like... Oh, I could see the flames traveling up her naked body, touching her, making her burn. I could see her bones start to show as the flesh and fat burned off them. I don't think she died until her guts spilled out and burned away. Anyway, that asshole Al decided to save me for the next day. And that was his mistake. They left me alone, figuring that I couldn't move far enough and fast enough to be a danger. They were wrong. I had enough willpower to get the hell out. I was head of SEC, you see. I knew where the wags were, how to hotwire them, when the SEC patrols were due, and who was on them. But first, I had to do something. I went back to the fire, and I gathered together all that was left of Becky. I took her with me and got the hell out. Didn't know where I was going, and I thought I was on my way to buy the farm, but on my own terms. But it didn't work out that way, did it? Fate will always decide, and it decided for me. It took me up that mountain to meet the end, but instead I found that old tech base. It was fate that then brought the others to me.
Carell gazed down at the box.
And it's fate that has finally brought us here, my love. Fate that has decreed we have a chance to be revenged. And if I die and join you, so much the better.